From Tribune Tower, WGN Radio presents A Conversation.
I want to make one thing perfectly clear.
A dialogue.
What are you prepared to do?
An astute debate.
Everything within the law.
And a peek behind the curtain of politics.
And then what are you prepared to do?
I think Chicago is not only the center of the country, I think it's the center of the world.
Don't tread on them.
Where did this statement come from?
This is the Sunday Spin. Your host is the Chicago Tribune's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, and welcome to this week's edition of the Sunday Spin for October the 9th, 2016. A big and busy day in Chicago. Welcome to our weekly look at politics and the week that lies ahead as the election moves ever closer. Time to grab that Sunday paper, pour that cup of coffee, and we'll do our best to get your week off to a good start. Well, a busy day in Chicago, as I said. Lots of people out this morning as the Chicago Marathon kicks off today, and lots of street closures. There is one advantage to getting up as early as we do, Shawnee, is that we beat those street closures for the most part.
That is one advantage, yes, that's right. Susan Berkus is here, and Sam, too, was telling me when they both came in that they had some delays because of the closures, but they're both here and ready to go.
Yeah, well, and we'll keep you up to date on all the traffic and all the things that are moving around downtown to Chicago today. And I have to tell you, if I sound a bit tired, it's because I did stay up for most of that Cubs game last night. I just could not help myself. There's something magic and special when you look at that center field scoreboard and you only see a couple of teams on that board. It just tells you what a special time of year it was. And Travis Wood, how unique that is to get called in an emergency relief situation and then turn around in the bottom half of the inning, batting second, and crank a home run on the first pitch. I mean, just, is everything going our way or what?
Let's be careful here.
All right. Yes, I'm you know me, of all people, when it comes to this, that I'm very...
You have your quirks. That's a good way to put it. Yes.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, superstitions. For example, Blackhawks. You won't attend a game because for fear of playoff game, particular for fear of jinxing things.
Yeah.
Do I have that right?
And that would hold true
with the Cubs.
My Cubs, yes. I would not want to go, and then I would feel like I would be blamed if they lost.
So the good teams overcome adversity, correct? Can we all agree on that?
Yes, indeed.
Game one, the Cubs win with only three hits.
Right.
Game two, the Cubs win despite making three errors.
Right.
And having their starting pitcher and possible Cy Young winner knocked out of the game.
And what do we know about Hendricks?
The x-rays were negative. It's a right forearm contusion. He told Kenny Rosenthal on Fox, actually on MLB Network, after the game that he will pitch again this postseason.
Oh, that's good. That's very good news.
Because, so a stinger, essentially.
Yeah, but a scary moment. There's no doubt about that.
And then when Baez was sliding into second,
yeah,
the head first slide, it looked like he took a shoe to the eye.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not good. But, and I mean, these guys know about how to slide into a base, but Javi just always seems to go for that head-first slide all the time.
Well, that's because he was watching the home run leave on Friday, and he thought he had a home run last night, and he's like, oh, crap, it's not gone.
Yeah, and truly, it was amazing that in that first game, that because the way he just clobbered the ball, and everybody, I think, thought it was a sure bet home run. And then to just see it, you know, barely make it into the basket was just crazy. But, yeah, let's go Cubs back in action on Monday in San Francisco, needing one game to advance to the National League Championship Series. We're all going to be watching that game on Monday. That's for darn sure. And Blackhawks go into action on Wednesday with the regular season. And I wouldn't make too much of the loss to St. Louis last night. That was, I took a look at who the roster was, and it had most of the regular starters didn't make the trip. So.
Did you see Duncan Keith was at Wrigley?
Was he really?
He was in the stands at Wrigley. So that tells you how important that game was in St. Louis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that was just a tune-up for some of the new kids, and good for Duncan Keith. I mean, that's get your mind right, you know. Enjoy it while it lasts before the regular season kicks in. And, you know, it'll be good to have him back on the ice, too. If anything, I think you're going to see the Hawks will have a great defense this year. But I will say in this kind of shortened preseason due to the World Championship games that I am concerned about their ability to score a little bit. But, hey, we're in first place right now. Remember that. And
they looked good the other night.
Well, you were at the game.
Another great evening there, and they looked really, really good. Tuesday,
were you sizing up a new Zamboni, perhaps, for the newsroom?
Yes, I was. As a matter of fact, I'm looking at the new models, trying to get a deal on a trade in, and I'm seeing if things are certified for good use. So, yeah, I'm working on that.
Well, remember, you don't need to get the optional air conditioning.
That's right.
You know, cheap it down just a little bit when you go out and kick the tires on the Zamboni.
I'm also seeing if I can toss in the slip and slide from the newsroom here, since now that the summer season's over.
Yeah, it's probably time for a new one of those. It's getting a little shabby. Yeah, I Friday I was I had duties to cover the president and his arrival here in Chicago, and it was started out as such a beautiful Friday morning, and all of a sudden there was a little drop of rain about 2 o'clock in the afternoon downtown, and you could tell the cold front kicked in, and it's definitely fall season in Chicago, and it was I have to admit I actually had to kick the heat on for one moment.
Yeah, I've had to do that myself.
Well,
reluctantly.
Partly that was my fault because I left a window open. And so, yeah, once I got everything back to temp, everything is just fine.
We've got a couple of really terrific fall days in store here, though. Today and tomorrow just looks wonderful. If you like fall weather like I do, these 2 days are going to be great.
Yeah, and you couldn't ask for better weather to get the marathon.
For the marathon, yeah, which is going to get underway here very, very shortly.
I can tell you've got your running shorts on. And
I've been in training.
Yeah, I know you have. That's why you were at the hockey game on Tuesday night.
He was doing squats in the hallway.
Oh, now you didn't have to tell everybody.
Boy, there's a visual picture to get everybody's day started. Chuanian squats, yes. It's
and wearing running shorts to boot. Right?
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, by the way, Rick, yes. President Obama threw out the first pitch in the 05 World Series with a Sox hat on, correct?
Yes.
He told reporters he was rooting for the Cubs. Is that like the most political thing ever? Or because you can't flip-flop. You're not supposed to do that.
Well, he didn't really say he's rooting for the Cubs. Actually,
he told some bystanders he was. I've been told on good accord.
Well, yeah, but... I mean,
yeah, but what?
Well, but everybody kind of thought he was going to go to one of those playoff games, right? And I said, there's no way he's going, because there's no way, you know, as the purported Sox fan that he is, that he would set foot at Wrigley Field. And what was I right?
He ended up playing golf.
Well, we knew that was going to happen, but yes, everybody, all the members of the traveling pool from Washington were all very excited because they thought there was a chance that they would get to see the playoff game at Wrigley. And I said, you got no chance. I said, trust me on that. But all I can tell you is, can you imagine if the presidential motorcade decided to go up to Wrigleyville on one of those nights?
Drive past Wrigley?
Well, to go to the game.
Or to let alone go to the game.
You think there was traffic issues today. I mean, when I was part of the travel pool on Friday, and it was time for him to go have dinner, and we were leaving his residence down in Kenwood, and I never thought I would see this, but we ended up closing the Dan Ryan at 6:11 p.m. on a Friday.
On a
night.
Friday, no less.
Yes. And
as Susan says, good timing, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah. And, I mean, we closed the drive to get to 55 and then to the Ryan, and then got off at Washington Street to the West Loop. And I just, I mean, it is a great way to travel if you're in the motorcade. But as the motorcade was leaving about 10 o'clock, and you could see the traffic on the Ryan, and I said, in the Kennedy, and I said, yeah, that's still left over from 6 o'clock earlier today. But yeah, but be aware of multiple street closings today for the marathon. Good luck to all the runners out there. And you've got a great day, just a great day in Chicago. Well, Dave's here to keep us up on all of the news. Susan's got the traffic. Sam's here with all the latest sports. Producer Jasmine's here to field your phone calls at 312-981-7200. That's also our text line, 312-981-7200. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/thesundayspin. We're on Twitter at @SundaySpin. And engineer Bob is out putting mile marker signs for the marathoners as they come by the window. Well, remember, you can find all of our shows at WGNradio.com. You can also get our podcast there or at iTunes just by searching for my name, Rick Pearson. We've got a great show today after Dave's 7:30 news update. We'll speak to Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. The chief will be here to discuss the Fight Crime, Invest in Kids initiative, as last month he went to Washington to advocate for such programs as early childhood education and child nutrition. Dave will be back at the top of the hour with more news, and then we'll speak to the president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, Mike Galatka. Mike will be here to discuss if video gaming in Chicago could help the city's revenue problems and perhaps that need to rely on hiking taxes. And then after the 8:30 news update, we'll be joined by Christine Dudley. Chris is the director of the Illinois Film Office, and we'll talk about all of the TV and movie production going on in Chicago and Illinois. And really, it's boost in the local economy. That's all coming up, but now it's time for a quick break. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Working on a mystery, going wherever it leads. Running down a dream. That's a little bit of music for our marathon runners this morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. It's time for our weekly spin through national politics, and what a dramatic turn of events. The Washington Post releases an Access Hollywood video of Donald Trump on a hot mic, and almost immediately the National Republican Party starts disassembling. Now, I'm not going to play that video, that audio, because quite frankly, there isn't much that I could air to make the point directly about Trump's discussion of women, groping, sexual assault, etc. Trump decided to offer a video apology, a first for his controversial campaign, but in it he calls his language and description of past actions, quote, a distraction, unquote. That might be how he sees it, but it doesn't seem to be stemming the damage among Republicans.
I've never said I'm a perfect person, nor pretended to be someone that I'm not. I've said and done things I regret. And the words released today on this more than a decade-old video are one of them. Anyone who knows me knows these words don't reflect who I am. I said it, I was wrong, and I apologize. I've traveled the country talking about change for America, but my travels have also changed me. I've spent time with grieving mothers who've lost their children, laid-off workers whose jobs have gone to other countries, and people from all walks of life who just want a better future. I have gotten to know the great people of our country, and I've been humbled by the faith they placed in me. I pledge to be a better man tomorrow and will never, ever let you down. Let's be honest. We're living in the real world. This is nothing more than a distraction from the important issues we're facing today. We're losing our jobs. We're less safe than we were 8 years ago. And Washington is totally broken. Hillary Clinton and her kind have run our country into the ground. I've said some foolish things, but there's a big difference between the words and actions of other people. Bill Clinton has actually abused women, and Hillary has bullied, attacked, shamed, and intimidated his victims. We will discuss this more in the coming days. See you at the debate on Sunday.
So there's your setup for tonight's presidential debate, and Donald Trump has made no secret of where he intends to take this debate. He's tweeted out, the media and establishment want me out of the race so badly. I will never drop out of the race, will never let my supporters down. That despite evidence that the RNC, the Republican National Committee, is halting its victory project work for Trump, sending emails to all of its vendors to stop all program efforts, as the RNC now looks to divert its money from the presidential race to efforts to help keep Congress in control of Republicans. My buddy Steve Toma, he's a Chicagoan who writes for McClatchy Newspapers, he puts it this way. The GOP now falls into four categories. One, I'm now against Trump. Two, I'm against what he said, but not him. Three, I was always against him. Or four, I have nothing to say. Well, nothing to say apparently includes the Illinois Republican Party. I asked the state's Republican chairman, Bruce Rauner's handpicked chairman, Tim Schneider, if the Illinois GOP remains firmly behind Donald Trump. So far, I have not gotten a response to that inquiry. We also had Governor Rauner yesterday was asked about the Donald Trump leaked video, and his response was basically using the same words he did in March to decry what he calls the rhetoric in the campaign. Now, he didn't identify a candidate's rhetoric. He did not attach a candidate's rhetoric to that. And so we've rapidly gotten to this point now where you have to say who you're going to vote for. And we've already seen that other Republicans in the state, U.S. Senator Mark Kirk, North Shore Congressman Bob Dole, have long distanced themselves from Trump. And as Dave mentioned in the news, downstate Republican Congressman Rodney Davis says Trump should get off the ticket. And that's kind of an interesting thing to note because Rodney Davis represents a central to southern Illinois district, and that was always believed to be one of the areas where a Trump factor could help those Republican efforts funded by Governor Bruce Rauner to try to erode that Democratic majority in the General Assembly. So we'll see exactly where Trump says he's going nowhere, and that might be where his presidential ambitions end up. There's the debate scheduled tonight in St. Louis at Washington University. It's a town hall style of debate, and frankly, this should be something that everyone watches. You're listening to The Sunday Spin on WGN. Up ahead in The Sunday Spin, we'll be speaking to Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's The Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to The Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue on this Chicago Marathon Day. Boy, you know, it seems like the week was a marathon. We've got the big presidential debate tonight, and of course, last week kind of things started with the vice presidential debate, in which Indiana Governor Mike Pence was largely viewed as the winner, something, of course, that Donald Trump promptly claimed credit for. Virginia Senator Tim Kaine appeared a bit over-caffeinated. Here's some of the brief highlights of that debate.
When Donald Trump is sitting down with Vladimir Putin, is it going to be America's bottom line? Or is it going to be Donald Trump's bottom line?
When Donald Trump and I observe that, as I've said, in Syria, in Iran, in Ukraine, that the small and bullying leader of Russia has been stronger on the world stage than this administration, that's stating painful facts. That's not an endorsement of Vladimir Putin.
When Donald Trump says women should be punished, or Mexicans are rapists and criminals,
I'm telling
or
you.
John McCain's not a hero, he is showing you who he is.
Senator, you whipped out that Mexican thing again. Look, he's not a polished politician like you and Hillary Clinton.
But we really feel like you should live fully and with enthusiasm the commands of your faith. But it is not the role of the public servant to mandate that for everybody else. So
for me, my faith informs my life. I try and spend a little time on my knees every day. But it all, for me, begins with cherishing the dignity, the worth, the value of every human life.
Why don't you trust women? Why doesn't Donald Trump trust women to make this choice for themselves?
Well, that's a little bit of the highlights of the vice presidential debate from last week. Now, I think we'll probably see a different bit of a tenor to the presidential debate tonight. Well, now joining me on the phone is Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. And Tom was recently in Washington, D.C., doing some advocacy work for various child initiatives. Chief, thanks so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Rick. Thank you.
So I know you've talked about this issue of basically kind of having a personal change of how, you know, a while back you were kind of, you know, let's lock everybody up kind of thing. And now, you know, you've seen that it's time to start investing in the early childhood lives of people so that it will lead to a better outcomes later on.
Absolutely. We've talked before that, you know, 20 years ago, probably when I was a patrolman or came up through the ranks, in law enforcement, I think it was widely accepted that the more statutes we passed, the more felony crimes would somehow reduce crime or make society safer. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that anymore. So recently, I was in Washington within the last several weeks, and I've also been in Springfield, and I was down there for the Fight Crime, Investing Kids, and Council for a Strong America's 20th anniversary. But while we were there, we were lobbying Congress, and we were lobbying on behalf of early childhood education, nutritional programs, support for strong families. And that sounds kind of strange from a law enforcement perspective or from a chief. And it's sometimes we're not well received. But at least this time, I happen to be down there with Tyler Edmonds, who's the state's attorney in Union County, Illinois, and a retired Lieutenant General Randall Rigsby. We traveled together along with Fight Crime, Investing Kids staff to celebrate their 20th anniversary, but to spend an entire day on Capitol Hill running down our congressmen, and I'm literally stopping them in the hallways and asking them to take a few minutes of their time so we could give them perspectives on how we can reduce crime without the traditional locking everybody up. And they were quite surprised, actually, Rick. Sometimes they look at us, as myself and Tyler Edmonds, as law enforcement personnel, and they're like, why aren't you here asking for more crimes or more money or more funding for equipment? How is it that you got involved in nutrition issues for children? And then we would explain to them that this is where we think America needs to go. Not only have I been lobbying in Springfield, we've been lobbying now in Washington, because, as you know, Rick, it isn't working. But the model that is across the United States for locking everyone up is not working. So I believe these programs, we need to start at 3 and 4, and we'll get an answer 15 years from now. Now, that's a hard sell in Washington, because they want to see the answers right now, right in front of you. But as far as reducing crime, we need to start at a much earlier age.
Well, Chief, do you see the mindset that you've personally changed? Do you see that kind of thing happening when it comes to our politically elected leaders in Springfield and in Washington?
I do and I don't, and I say that because when I even in Springfield or Washington, when we are lobbying or running them down just to talk to them and prevent our facts, and these are data-driven facts, a lot of times they say, Chief, this is a really good idea. I believe in it. Show me the data. We give them the data. And they say, Chief, there isn't the money for these programs. But yet we're putting money into prisons and locking individuals up, both juvenile and adults. And we give them the dollars on what it costs. And then we give them the dollars on what these programs cost. And then I do something that's kind of unusual, that if you track some of the worst offenders that we lock up, if you go back to when they were 3 and 4 years old, and you look at their juvenile criminal history, and you look at their adult criminal history, and you look at the way they were raised, if we had reached them at 3 and 4 years old, when they could have got early education, proper nutrition, support, we would not be in a situation, and it's actually factual. Yes, it takes longer to get there, but the violence that's going on in the Metro Chicago area, the violence that's going on throughout the United States, we of law enforcement have gone back and tracked these individuals and shown, you know, when they were arrested when they're 8, 9, 10 years old as juveniles for sometimes serious crimes, I can show you that if we had taken a different approach early on, we would not be investing these dollars into locking them up, prosecuting, and other very expensive programs for really incarceration.
Well, Chief, I can see where you're, you know, when you talk to those political leaders, you know, that there are those two schools of thought. And one, you're starting to see it because of basically the financial situation of the state and the financial situation of the country, that, you know, criminal justice reform is getting a new look. And partly it's a bipartisan thing where before some politicians might be concerned about appearing soft on crime, but you're seeing kind of this nexus of progressives as well as people concerned about, you know, the effectiveness of limited amounts of cash. And do you really want it to go into this huge overburdened prison system that we have in this country?
Exactly. And I'm telling them, it is about, in some ways, dollars, but the dollars need to go towards these preventative programs. They need to go towards early childhood education, parenting skills, nutrition. We've done it the other way. I'm there to convince them, no, you do need to take a different approach. And they say, this is a good idea, but what, you know, do I look soft on crime? Can I have an immediate response in a year or two? Probably not. Well, you can have a response within 5 years. You can start to show the recidivism is down. You can show that we're not locking up these juveniles. But we need to really get them at 3 and 4 and 5 years old. So I'm asking Congress, I'm asking our state legislators, please put the money into early education, early, 3, 4, 5. Put it into nutrition, because some of these offenders that we lock up, they didn't even have a good meal. They haven't had any education of life. They have the poor parenting that's happening, poor parenting skills. We have Fight Crime, Invest in Kids, Council for Strong America has data behind parenting skills programs, but they need to be funded. So I mean, there needs to be this shift where they stop saying it's a good program, Chief. It's a good program. And they need to really put focus on the dollars to get the services to those most needy.
We're speaking with Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. Maybe you might notice a little theme here in our little bit of bridge music today on Chicago Marathon Day. We're speaking with Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel, and Tom has been lobbying both Springfield and Washington in an effort to get more funds devoted to early childhood education, well-being, nutrition programs. And Chief, you also are involved in this Citizen Readiness Index that the Council for a Strong America has. Could you explain what that is?
Yes. Well, when we were in Washington, they released their 2016 Citizen Readiness Index. And Council for a Strong America is the parent organization for Fight Crime, Invest in Kids. And in that report that we presented at the conference and in Washington, it really focused on giving the state's letter grades for citizen readiness. And Illinois received a C, which isn't good enough. And those are really based on a ready workforce. Did you know that over 70% of the young adults between 17 and 24 that apply to the United States military do not get in because of either criminal backgrounds, obesity, or they're just not prepared to be in the military? That's 70%. That's a large number. So that's one of the if you can't get into the military, Rick, if you can't get in past the basic military written exam, which is a general aptitude exam, we haven't prepared our young children to come up and get in the workforce in the United States. So in our report focused on advanced childhood education and creating a healthier school. There's actually a federal program called McVie, which stands for the Maternal Infant Early Childhood Home Visiting. That was also part of what we were advocating for Council for Strong America. But that report, the 2016 Citizen Readiness Index, is a report that's available on the internet that was just released, and it's all facts-based. It's all data-driven. So we passed that report out to every single elected official in Washington that we came in contact with that day that we lobbied. And I really think it's a powerful tool. And you can see years of data that's been tracked. And it, in one way, it's a blueprint for what we should be doing, but it's also a little bit disappointing that we have such a adult population, early adult, 20 to 17 to 24, that really isn't ready to take on what America has to offer. And that includes businesses. There were private businessmen down in Washington who said they don't have enough skilled workers to man their organizations. So they're backing up our Citizen Ready Index report also.
Well, and you said you have lobbied both Springfield and Washington. How, as far as Springfield, with the fact of the state's, you know, budget mess, the budget impasse, the effect on some of these social service programs that directly impact some of the goals in the Citizens Readiness Index and the goals of fight crime, invest in kids, I mean, that had to be pretty frustrating.
Yes, it is, because it all is about dollars in Springfield, no question. It is about when we go down there and ask for funding, we're competing with everyone else. But one thing we tell them is, I'm not here anymore to ask for you to fund new squad cars. I'm not asking you to fund. These are chiefs. I mean, remember, this organization is 5,000 police chiefs, sheriffs, prosecutors throughout Illinois, other advocacy groups. So we're down there unified saying, yeah, you know, this is something that I get nothing from. In law enforcement, we get something from that. We get lower crime. We get a better citizenry. But me personally, and the state's attorney Tyler Edmonds that was standing next to me from Union County, we don't get anything. There's no direct funding coming to us. There's no new equipment coming for us. This is a long term issue that I think our state legislators have a hard time wrapping their head around. They keep saying it's really good, but we need the dollars. And somebody has to say, yes, this is a good long-term program. We are going to give you long-term funding. Because, you know, Rick, I watch these every night. I watch the violence going on in the greater metropolitan Chicago area. I see the marches. I see the marches against violence, the marches against shootings, painful parents on the news who have lost a child. And every time I'm saying, why don't we put the money up front? Some of this violent crime could end. We need to put the dollars, the 3 and 4 and 5, and we won't see those parents having to go on the news when their son or daughter was murdered. That's a fact. We won't have to do that. It's not completely going to be reduced, but I am telling you that this data will back up the fact that I will be speaking to you on the phone 10 years from now telling you about the successes and not the failures.
And frankly, it sounds a lot like some of our politicians that they keep echoing, you know, education is my top priority. But then, you know, let's see it. Let's if you say it, let's prove it. Show it up. And, you know, that's exactly kind of the attitude I think you're seeing too. That, oh, it sounds like a great idea, but, well,
yes, they're shocked when they see me down there. They literally are used to us lobbying them for more crime, more crimes, more statutes, more funding for equipment, and they're like, aren't you here to ask for to make something a class 4 felony or a class? You know, they're used to police chiefs doing that. I'm trying to turn the table and say, enough of that way. Please go this way.
Well, you can find more about the Citizen Readiness Index and more details from the Council for a Strong America, and you can go to strongnation.org, strongnation.org, for more information about that. Riverside Police Chief Tom Weitzel. Tom, thanks so much for joining me. It's always great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Rick, and have a great Sunday.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, we'll be talking to Mike Galacta, president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, about what video gambling in Chicago might mean as far as revenues for the city and the state.
Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning, everyone. Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune here in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue on this beautiful Sunday morning. A couple of polls out. One, a Politico morning consult poll conducted after the release of that leaked video of Donald Trump, which shows that voters are kind of viewing Trump's comments through their own partisan lens. 70% of Democrats say they feel that Donald Trump should end his campaign, but just 12% of Republicans and 13% of female Republicans say they agree that Trump should end his campaign. Also, a new NBC News poll taken, this was before the Trump audio, shows Hillary Clinton up by 12 points in Pennsylvania and up by 3 points in Florida, that two very crucial states. Well, now joining me on the show is Michael Galatka. He's president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association. And Michael, thank you much for joining me on the show.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. Good morning. I wanted to have you on because, you know, we've gone through these recent rounds of property tax increases, fee increases. There's still more that are being discussed every day here in Chicago. And yet Chicago kind of remains this island of no gaming activity. And your organization represents the video gaming operators in the state. And I understand that there was a recent report conducted by the state that looks at what the prospect of bringing gaming into Chicago could mean as far as revenue.
Yeah, the numbers that could be generated by video gaming just in the city of Chicago are pretty sizable and would help the city and the state kind of address some of the issues, at least, that the city faces. We think that the city of Chicago would generate at least $50 million in new revenue for their coffers alone in video gaming tax, and the state would see another $200+ million. So, you know, that's annual. So it's an ongoing constant revenue stream that can be used towards, you know, preventing the types of taxes that we're seeing now, or just, you know, helping shore up some other things.
Well, how successful has video gambling been, you know, statewide where it does exist?
I think our intent from the beginning is always to have video gaming make an economic difference for all of the people that are involved, whether that means the state, which is by the end of this year will have generated over $900 million in new revenue. Local municipalities right now are generating over $50 million in new revenue from video gaming. And on top of that, probably the story that's not really discussed the most, but that I like to really point out because it's hard to really to see, is over $1.5 million of new revenue to over 5,000, almost 6,000 small businesses throughout the state. And that's in over 1,000 municipalities throughout the state.
And, you know, I know, well, why don't we have it in Chicago? What's the issue?
I think it seems as though at this point that the mayor is really trying to push for the downtown casino. And I think he doesn't really want to see video gaming as an option. He wants to see the casino as an option. We personally think that you could use both, and that we would kind of agree that a casino in the city of Chicago would be a great attraction for conventions. It would be a great attraction for tourism. It would do what the state needs, which is bring in money that's from outside of the state and repatriate some of the Chicago money that goes to Indiana and the casinos outside of the state. But we also think that the neighborhoods and the small businesses throughout the Chicago area, the hospitality businesses, also should be able to generate and some gaming revenue. And we don't think that it would really affect truly the casino's value.
That both could coexist because they're playing to different audiences?
Sure, they do in other cities in the state. They coexist. I think Chicago even, I mean, the reason for a casino is to bring in that outside money, to bring in the tourists, to bring in the conventioneer. And frankly, a Chicago casino would likely have real high limits at its tables and that kind of thing. And I don't know that that's going to attract huge local players. I think that you can have that world-class casino downtown and at the same time allow local businesses to be able to provide that option too with video gaming terminals. And I think it's a good mix. I think it's a mix that really helps, you know, small businesses in the neighborhoods and that have been, you know, hurt over the last decade with increase in taxes. Even the increase in the minimum wage is a real blow to small hospitality businesses in the city.
We're speaking with Michael Galacta, president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Makes you want to put on your running shoes on this Chicago Marathon Sunday morning. I'm Rick Pearson. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Joining me on the program is Michael Galacta. He's president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association. We're talking about the potential impact that video gaming could have on revenues for the city of Chicago. And I guess, I mean, Mike, has anybody, you know, gone to the mayor, gone to City Hall, gone to Alderman and say, you know, This could help ease some of the revenue crunch?
We've spoken to a lot of people at a lot of different levels. The reality is on a lot of occasions, we have aldermen come up to members of our industry and say, you know, when are we going to get video gaming in Chicago? And, you know, the reality is with the political situation is that until the fifth floor is happy and kind of open to the concept, it's hard to get enough aldermen, you know, to really push it forward.
Sure, it has to be dictated by the top down, and of course the mayor is set on having a casino. But even with that, you know, looking at Springfield, even any type of casino expansion gets into all the various hoops of the existing casinos and the horse racing industry, those kinds of things.
Right. As you know, the gaming expansion bill has been talked about for years, maybe a decade, and there's always so many different interests throughout the state, whether it's Chicago interests or downstate interests, and that it's kind of something that it's hard to balance. And when one side gets out of whack, you know, Chicago decides they want a casino, and even though it probably makes sense, if Chicago got a casino, there's legislators from down south or the horse tracks or even video gaming, if it came down to it, that would, you know, say, well, what do we get out of it? Or where's ours? Why don't we get one? Why is Chicago going to get one? So that's why video gaming, we feel, is something that could be up and running within the year and could be generating money. And every year that the city doesn't have it, it's missing out on revenue revenue that it could have. And the Chicago casino is, you know, I guess other people have a better sense of where it's at, but my understanding is that it's not necessarily any closer today than it was, you know, when the mayor got into office, you know, several years ago.
Well, and let's face it, look what it took to get video gaming legalized in the state. That took several years.
It took probably 20 years of the idea being in Springfield, and then even once it was passed, it took, you know, 2 or 3 years to even come to fruition. And here we are 4 years out, and we're kind of just getting rolling full speed. But because the rest of the state has, if the city of Chicago came online, the Illinois Gaming Board would kind of have a singular focus as to Chicago location. So I think that Chicago could come up a lot quicker than the rest of the state.
Well, and also, too, with revenues from state revenues being dedicated to a capital program, that made a big difference as well.
Sure, there's billions of dollars of funds from that capital, the capital projects that have gone to the city. The reality is that video gaming, as successful as it has been, has fallen slightly short of what the expectations were, because there was an expectation that the city of Chicago, which accounts for over 20% of the population, and some of the other larger suburbs would be on. The reality is we've kind of gotten almost there without it, but the expected revenue for capital projects is actually slightly short of what was expected, which, you know, to the extent that it puts those projects that would be coming in the next couple of years in jeopardy, I mean, I think there's a benefit there, you know. But if you even put that aside and just look at new monies that the city's wanting the state to kind of contribute to, whether it's the school issues, the pensions, I think video gaming and an additional couple hundred million dollars for the state would, I guess, give the state a little bit more flexibility to have those conversations with the city.
Now, I understand there's, in addition to Chicago, there's in total there's about 150 communities that prohibit video gaming. But are you seeing some of these communities looking at, seeing what the neighbor's getting by legalizing it? Are you seeing communities reconsidering that at all?
Sure. I mean, that's where a lot of our growth has been, a lot of where the number growth has been. There's been growth on a kind of per unit basis, but also every year we have more and more municipalities that in the beginning didn't understand it. They didn't like the rules. They didn't know what the rules were. They thought it was going to be the downfall of their town. And they're looking out there and they're realizing that there's been there's been negligible effects to anything. There's been no real noticeable negative effects. Every town that I've been to that has looked into opting into video gaming has always had their police chief go and ask neighboring towns or other towns that have done it. And I've never heard a police chief come back with anything other than there's no noticeable effect of video gaming on crime and that. So I think that, in addition to the added benefit of the revenue to that town and the added kind of competitive kind of equalization to the small businesses, the small bars and restaurants in their town, that maybe the neighboring town has it, but they don't. So how do I compete with those customers who want to spend their 20, 30 bucks when they show up at the bar on a video gaming terminal? So we're seeing growth, and I think as the budget gets further and further along, we're going to see that revenue become more and more important.
I do note there are some communities that are you know, imposing local, more stringent rules, like, you know, requiring a percentage of food and beverage sales, I think is something that Springfield is looking at. And I understand Carbondale, too, is placing a cap on the number of video terminals that are allowed to operate.
Yeah, and in general, I would argue that our industry is happy with that. I don't think we want to force ourselves into municipalities that we want them to be happy with the video gaming terminal. And to the extent that the video gaming has grown, it has been under the more or less the complete control of each local municipality, because you can't have video gaming without a liquor license. So a town can control its growth by how how it releases its liquor licenses. And if a town says, okay, we want video gaming for our local businesses, but we only want it if, like you said, 50% of the business's revenue comes from food, and not, you know, preventing kind of a main video gaming focus for a business, we're okay with that because the town has decided that they will allow it, but under these circumstances. And as long as, you know, that they're able to choose, that we think that that's the power of what video gaming has provided, the local municipality to be able to choose how it grows.
Well, we'll keep looking. This is a potential option in the city of Chicago. Michael Galacta, president of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, thank you very much for joining me this morning on the Sunday Spin.
Thanks, Rick. Have a good Sunday.
We'll be back with more right after this. Up ahead on the Sunday Spin, on this beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago, we'll be speaking with Christine Dudley. Chris is the director of the Illinois Film Office, and I think anybody who's spent any decent amount of time in the city can tell that filming TV episodes, movie making, it seems like it's on every corner and at an all-time high here in downtown Chicago. So we'll be talking to Chris about really what's going on, who's making all of these TV and shows and movies, and what it means for Illinois' economy.
We don't suck anymore. We don't suck anymore. We don't suck anymore like we used to do. We don't lose anymore. What was all of that for? We don't suck anymore like we used to do. Keep those K's coming, Jake Arrieta. Unless they don't skip a beat. This has to be the season, the curse is gone. Every now and then we get some confidence that we'll be there in November. We're just all a little afraid that we'll be wrong. Don't really care what Epstein's doing tonight. Whatever he did, he's doing it right. If Madden, don't you dare.
Figure a little Cubs music is in order after last night's Game 2 victory in the NLDS Divisional Series. We need one more in San Francisco on Monday to go to play for the pennant. That's musician Joey Boosie, and he's written that ode for the Cubs, and I thought it's pretty catchy, you know, taking advantage of Joe Maddon's, the coach's kind of motto there. Well, joining me now on the show is my good friend Chris Dudley. Christine Dudley is director of the Illinois Film Office, and thank you for braving the marathon misdirection to be able to get into the studio today.
Anybody to ever tells me I need to run a marathon, just to make sure that I dissuade them of that notion. My goodness, those people are healthy.
Well, and it probably was like running a marathon to get into
the studio today. But we're here, and that's all good.
That's good. Well, thank you so much for joining me this morning. And the reason I wanted to have you on is, you know, we talk about kind of the state of the overall Illinois economy and always looking for, you know, ways to improve the job climate and things like that. And it just seems, as I said before you got here, that you can walk almost on any corner in Chicago and there is film or TV production going on. And this is, this is a big industry in the state.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Rick. I really appreciate the opportunity. And you're absolutely correct. In an environment where sometimes we're not always hearing good news, the news about film and television and commercial production is good news. We're growing. It's a growing industry. Last year alone, we calculated, because the data that we collect in the film office, $330 million in a direct spend into the Illinois economy, and that was equaling about 11,372 job hires. So, you know, when you look at those kind of numbers, you see that there's growth, and but there's also room for improvement. We're in the top 10 of the states that have robust filming production, and we were named one of the top five by Movie Maker Magazine. Chicago was for filming. So it's a lot of good news happening, but there's a lot more to do.
Is there a thing where it's almost like word of mouth, where there's a production company that comes in and either they're sustaining or they had a, you know, making a movie and everything worked out that there's good word of mouth that goes and passes along in the industry?
Well, it's a kind of a two-step process. Really, the film tax credit incentives are really the driving force on all film production. In Canada, roughly 30 years ago, the tax incentive notion came to pass. And
that's why they used to use Toronto to
exactly.
make it look like it was Chicago.
Yeah, and the film Chicago was really kind of the point where people went, whoa, wait a minute, what's going on? Why is all this production going up to Toronto? So we're one of 34 states that has a film tax credit, and that is really the driving force in studio production. What happens, though, if you don't do a good job, to your point, if they don't have a good experience, then, you know, problems could ensue and you could not be on the list. That being said, what has happened here is the ecosystem has grown onto itself and it's becoming more and more self-contained. So we're very fortunate to have four NBC broadcast television programs, the Chicago series.
Yes, the Chicago
and
series.
And as I always say fondly, I light a candle to Dick Wolf every morning. the fourth one is filming now and will be coming on air in January. And then Fox, 20th Century Fox, has really made a strong investment in Illinois. But the new news is that the online carriers of original content, such as Amazon and Netflix, are now putting a footprint down in Illinois.
And I was going to ask you about that because that's kind of the new growth area.
Yeah, and that's the thing about television, commercial, and TV and film production. There are so many. There are over 400 platforms, original content. Netflix announced $11 billion in terms of investment for original content a couple of weeks ago. So there's nowhere to go but up because there's so many places to go and you have to have content, you have to have production. And we're seeing that. I'm very pleased to talk about Patriot. For the listeners out there, if you have Amazon or Amazon Prime, the actual pilot is online right now. And it's written by a local writer and director, Steve Conrad. The pilot was filmed in Canada, but Steve convinced Amazon to come to Chicago and Illinois to film the series. And they just wrapped here in Illinois. They're overseas doing some other work right now. But it's a wonderful program. I really enjoyed the pilot. And the good news is, I guess, is that it's not about Chicago and it's not about Illinois. We are just the production area for it. And they utilized so much, not just of Chicago, but the suburban communities for their filming. The storyline is based in Milwaukee, Washington, D.C., Belgium, Luxembourg, and we had it all for them so they could create that environment for filming, and a lot of local individuals involved in the production, really a very locally driven opportunity, and I think we're going to hope that everybody watches so we get another season out of it.
Well, I know Chicago is kind of a hub, and that's what everybody thinks of Chicago-centrically about this. But, I mean, there is other filming and activities going on in the rest of the state as well.
Absolutely. And again, you know, Chicago will always remain that focal point because of the production facilities and what's called the 30-mile zone, TMZ. And that's where union shows, there's a borderline for the 30-mile zone indicates for the union contracts what becomes overtime and so forth and so on. I won't get into all the details because, quite frankly, that's between the productions and their contracts. But at the end of the day, they are using a lot. We just worked with a film that's potentially coming here the other day, and they were looking for of pine forest. So they were up in northwest Illinois the other day.
Around Galena area.
Just south of Rockford, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, scouting that opportunity. We've had a lot of requests for Champaign. And to that end, I'd like to give a shout out to Champaign. The Champaign Visitors Bureau, Convention and Visitors Bureau, is doing a lot to attract film and commercial development to that community. And they've formed their own film office. Obviously, it's not a branch of state government, but they are bringing the entire community and the entire county together to make it very film friendly for permitting, for opportunities, for locations. So we're working in partnership with them, and we hope to expand that with other conventions.
How did that initiative come out? Because it seems like a new way of looking at things.
Some very industrious entrepreneurs, and quite frankly, film and television production is the ultimate entrepreneurial adventure. You take a word on a piece of paper and you create magic from it, and all that goes into doing that. Champaign, obviously, is a thriving creative arts community because of the university, but there's a wonderful production facility down there, and a gentleman named Brett Hayes and his partner, and they thought that this would make a good sense given the infrastructure that they have, given the locations that they have, and given the opportunity for students. And that's a very big and important part of what we try to do at the film office, is to grow the industry from cradle to grave, if you will, making sure that we're retaining those students who are coming here for education or have are in the film schools. And the community came together. It took them about a year to put this program together. And actually, BMW filmed a commercial there that aired on the Super Bowl. So, during the Olympics, excuse me. So they are having some success. It's a partnership, and indeed, and of course, my our counterparts at the Chicago Film Office, are amazing. They've been around for over 30 years, and they are, so busy every day. But collaboratively, we look at also the education piece, and I again want to point out that that's very important. Chicago Film Office recently initiated a filmmaker in residence program. And that is a next step in, again, developing that next generation or that independent film that is so important to the creative arts economy and just to the creative arts.
We're speaking with Christine Dudley. She is the director of the Illinois Film Office. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin.
This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this beautiful Sunday morning in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue. And joining me here in the studio is Christine Dudley, my friend and director of the Illinois Film Office. And we're talking about a bright spot in Illinois' economy, the booming industry of film, TV, commercial, video, digital, multi-platform content making, as it were,
yes,
in Chicago and in Illinois. And Chris, you mentioned about the key element is that tax credit that exists. Could you explain exactly what that is?
Without getting too far into the weeds, Rick, because it is a statutory program, and the thing, the folks who put the tax credit together, and again, going back to my earlier comment that there was runaway production and most production was moving to the Northland of Canada, the incentive here in Illinois is very specific to Illinois. So therefore, an individual, a production, makes an application to my office, and they have to, there's certain qualifications that they have to meet. And one of them is what we call lovingly the but-for clause. But for the incentive, they could film it elsewhere. And that is to indicate that they, you know, the incentive is necessary for this particular production. They then have to produce the commercial, the TV show, or the film, spend all the money, and the qualified expenses that are part of the incentive are only Illinois spend. So only goods and services spent in Illinois, and only salaries for individual Illinois residents up to $100,000. So it's really based on production crew. We're not, you know, Taraji P. Henson's salary or, you know, Terrence Howard or, you know, Taylor Kinney's salaries are not part of that package. It's about Illinois jobs, Illinois and Illinois services. And what we're seeing as a result of that is that the ecosystem outside of those productions is growing. Yesterday, I was over at Abel Cine, which is a camera company. They put a strong, very strong footprint here. It's the services to the productions. You're also seeing Panavision's coming back, for example. They haven't been here for a while with a full-scale opportunity, you know. So the ecosystem, these are businesses that are not only servicing the industry, they're paying taxes, they have employees, you know, they're living in the community. And, you know, so the multiplier is really growing as a result of the incentive, which is just for the production piece.
It's like suppliers. It's part of a supply
exactly.
chain.
Exactly. I mean, I'd love to be the lumber guy. I mean, and that's, you know, the other piece of our incentive is that we're the only state that requires a diversity plan. And the diversity plan means when you apply for the tax credit, you have to provide us with a plan to show us that you are going to be giving best faith efforts to hire a diverse crew, production crew, and front office staff. And that includes women and minorities. We have seen, again, the growth since this part of the incentive was initiated. We've seen a tremendous amount of growth. This year alone, in looking at the reports and the data, 49% of crew and front office staff is in the diverse column. So we're, you know, with all the talk in Hollywood about diversity, Illinois is, I think, at the forefront, and we've had discussions with other states and productions, and I think it's a really strong component of the program, and it also, again, plays into the whole idea of growing the industry through education and through the opportunity for folks to have jobs in a really exciting growth area.
Well, and you mentioned the education component, and part of me wonders when you look at some of these jobs, I mean, we hear all the time about employers needing a skilled workforce. I mean, are the workers there in Illinois to meet, you know, an increased demand?
Yeah, no, and I think anybody who's looking to get in, you know, you start in various, you know, as a production assistant possibly, which is what, by the way, this is one of my favorite stories. And Bob Iger, the CEO of Walt Disney, started out as a production assistant in Ithaca, New York. I mean, you know, it's obviously he went on to a very successful career, but there are career paths for that. Over hundreds of people are involved in the production of a television show. I was on the set of Chicago Fire filming their 100th episode, by the way.
Wow.
Very excited about that. And just sitting and watching and reading what's called a call sheet, which is everybody who's involved on a daily basis on that day producing, there's hundreds of people who go into making one episode of a television program. A television commercial takes a lot of people to produce, and obviously a film such as Southside with You, which just premiered here a few months ago about Barack and Michelle Obama's first date. All filmed here in Chicago, all filmed actually in some of it in Lake County. Some of the scenes were up in Lake County. But, you know, so there's just really good opportunities. We've got great film schools. DePaul is in the top 20. And the Columbia is here, Tribeca, Flashpoint, Northwestern. It's just we've got an amazing infrastructure in the education area for film and production, but also, you know, electricians and gaffers, and there's just so many skilled work sets and front office. Front office is very important, keeping the trains running on time, doing the accounting. When you think of it, it is a business, and all of the things that go into managing a business tenfold are part of a production.
Christine Dudley, director of the Illinois Film Office, thank you so much for joining me here in studio on this traffic challenged Sunday morning, and also for providing a little bit of bright spot from what we tend to hear about the
Illinois
economy.
Thank you for the opportunity, Rick. It really is an exciting time for Illinois in terms of, and we want to have more, and we hope to have more. We've got 9 shows on the filming here right now, so everybody tune into Fox and NBC and get on your streaming for Amazon and Netflix.
We'll be back with more right after this. Well, that's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Sunday Spin. I want to thank my guests, Tom Weitzel, Chief Police Riverside, Michael Galatka, President of the Illinois Gaming Machine Operators Association, and Christine Dudley, Director of the Illinois Film Office. As always, I want to thank all you out there for listening. And now it's time for the great Dean Richards on the traditional rant about the Chicago Marathon Sunday.
I have
Sunday.
No idea what you're talking about. I'm a man of peace and love today.
Really? What happened?
We'll talk about it.
I got four hours
to fill.
I will stay tuned then. I want to hear.
I got 4 hours to fill. I'm delighted to walk into the studio and hear you talking about film production in Chicago.
Well, I've known
all that's going on here in Chicago.
I've known Chris for a long time, and I thought that it would be kind of a nice transition into your show.
Very nice. And it's so important. I talk to people all the time who work in production, who work making the films and the TV shows. There's a lot of money that comes into Chicago, to Chicago workers, to people, to actual people. I don't mean the big studios. I mean, they make a lot of money, too. But there's a lot of money in catering, and it goes on and on. So that's why I'm, always happy to see that going on. I'm especially happy when I watch Chicago PD, and you see a couple of the cops on the show saying, "I just checked the WGN weather app. They say it's going to be a scorcher today." Even they know where to go to get weather.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, and it is the best app. I even tweeted out that when there was all that concern about the hurricane. That the president was coming here, and I said, well, if he's going to be in Chicago, at least he's going to have the best meteorological advice anywhere from Tom Skilling.
They all check with Skilling before they do anything, and that includes the people over at NBC. Oh, I would have liked to have been a fly on Brant Miller's wall that morning when that came out.
We appreciate all the plugs.
Have that. We've got the marathon going on today. We've got about the Cubs last night.
Terrific.
Amazing. We've got lots of reaction on that. Oh, we may talk about Donald Trump a little bit today and SNL.
Is there something that happened?
Not that I'm aware of.
That debate will be something to watch. Speaking of entertainment, that will be something to watch tonight.
Wow, wow, wow.